You're listening to the Wheeler Dealer Podcast, supported by Gardex. Industry-leading automotive products, including paint and interior protection, insurance products, and digital solutions. To find out more, visit GardexGroup.com.
Hello, everyone. It's Mike Brewer, and this is my wingman sat beside me, Petrolhead. Introduce yourself.
It's me, Andy J. Hello. How are you doing?
I'm all right. Yeah. Welcome to the Wheeler Dealer Podcast. Not to be confused with a TV show of a very similar name, also hosted by me. But it is a podcast about people, for people, and about their motoring love. And me and you kicked this off, didn't we, with some really good guests.
Yeah.
But now I think we've just gone as far as we could possibly, you know, this is going through your contact book. And you just hit upon a name. I wish he was in my contact book.
We're both excited about it.
You hit upon a name, you go, oh my God, this guy was a member of the biggest band, literally the biggest band in the world. Not only was he a member of that band, he then went on to go and play in Las Vegas for 11 years, lived out there for decades.
Everyone already knows who it is.
Yes,
now I just said that. Immediately they know who
exactly.
It is.
Exactly. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Wheeler Dealer Podcast, Mr. Matt Goss.
Hey, Matt.
Hello, lovelies. Are you all right?
Matt, first and foremost, you are gorgeous.
So are you. I mean, I've already started undressing you in my eyes.
Oh, mate, don't do that. Sorry, Matt, you will never, ever eat again. Trust me.
I'm actually feeling a bit nauseous.
Exactly. You sound just like my wife. She says that. I feel a bit nauseous. Shut the bathroom door, please, mate. So, Matt, everything that's been said about you has probably already been said. And we've had that documentary about you on TV as well, which is absolutely phenomenal, about you and your brother getting back together. Plus, we know that you're back on tour. You're back in the UK. You're on home turf. You're back in the motherland. What we really want to know is, what was it like living in Vegas for 11 years?
Yeah, it's beautiful. I mean, the thing is, Vegas is that the strip is one thing, but you end up, you know, you do hang out with other entertainers. You do get their, you know, their perspective. I mean, people like Bette Midler, she was like, gave me all this advice, Cher, Jerry Lewis.
Wow.
Are you pinching yourself when you're talking to these people, Matt? Are you a bit like, this is Cher, and she still looks like she was 18 for some reason?
I mean, yeah, she's still beautiful. I mean, it's, I actually, I designed jewellery, and I gave her one of my pieces of jewellery.
Wow. Just,
it's incredible, like, when people like Jerry Lewis comes to your show, and he doesn't fall asleep because you're quite relieved at that point. But he stayed the whole 2 hours and we had a good old chat afterwards and he came again. But, and I actually ended up singing at his memorial. And But when those kind of people turn up, you know, people that have been good mates with Sinatra and Sammy Davis and been in those incredible films during that time and they're in your audience, I mean, you do feel very humbled. It's an incredibly humbling experience.
It must be an amazing feeling that. I lived in LA for 6 years and I used to work a lot in Vegas. And I was saying to this earlier to Andy, and I hope you don't mind me saying this, but there was every time I drove into LA and there's a picture of Matt Goss hanging on the side of a skyscraper, a little bit of wee come out. I used to get really excited because I'm a London boy, and you're a London boy, and it was
But you're only human, you know me.
Yeah, but like I got so excited. It's a bit like I said to her, it's a bit like when you see a Range Rover or a Mini in Vegas or LA, you get a little bit excited. You go, oh, we are here. You know, England is here, and we can make a footprint in this town.
I've got to be honest. What you just said then, like, is such a beautiful thing for me to hear. Like, I took great pride being a Brit in Las Vegas. And they said, everybody says, you cannot go to Vegas and make it work. And that's kind of like a red rag to a bull to me. And I remember the first year, definitely you're finding your feet, started at the Palms Hotel. And, that went brilliantly 9 months. And then Caesars came to the show. And then the president of Caesars Palace outright said, we have stolen Matt Goss from the Palms. There's no there's no subtlety in the press release. He says, we've stolen Matt Goss from the Palms. And that moment when I actually signed the deal, actually had dinner, had lunch at a place called Beijing Noodle Number 9. We had a bowl of noodles with the president of Caesars. And he says, do you want a beer? And I'm like, yeah, I do. He says, have you got a good imagination? I'm like, yes. And he took me into this room. And it was just basically a room where there was maybe six hookers and two drunk fellas, and it was like, this is going to be my showroom. But then began the journey of building it, polishing it up, painting the walls. And then it ended up being the Gossy room. And they were my family. Caesars were my family.
Did the eight people that were in there already, Matt, did they stay? Once
yeah.
Did, once you done it up? To, the six hookers and the,
exactly.
and the two lads? Did you keep them?
Well, it was actually 70 excluding me.
Matt, you must have just been pinching yourself. I mean, did you wake up with a tiger in the bedroom and, you know, debauchery everywhere? Did that happen?
That sounds like your personal life, not mine. But,
yeah, possibly.
But it was, no, I mean, there was definitely, like, we would sit above Celine Dion's suite as the roof, you know, where the hangover is. So we would sit up there. We weren't technically allowed to sit up there, but we were, you know, the security guard would always turn a blind eye and we'd take a bottle of scotch and we'd watch the strip and just have a couple of scotch, glasses of scotch and look at the strip and just, you know, I do remember a few shirts being taken off and stuff like that, but it was definitely, and a couple of ripped pairs of tuxedo pants because it was a ladder to get up. But it was just one of those things where, you know, as you say, I was born in Southeast London, and just to go to Vegas and actually have an 11-year residency, it's part of my DNA now. And I learned more in Vegas as a singer and a songwriter and an entertainer, certainly, than anywhere else in the world, because you have to burn your ego to such small pieces, like microscopic, you know, no ego. And because people are coming to see you that may know nothing about you, they may know your name and that's it. They've read a review and they want to be entertained. And they're the people that excite me as an entertainer. I'm like, I'm coming for you. And I always did. I always got them by the end of the show.
That's brilliant. I can remember I was with a gang of corporate people that I was sort of hosting, this gang of corporate people out in Vegas. We went into all the bars and restaurants, and part of that evening was going to go and see a theatre show. And I can remember them trying to book Matt Goss, and they were down at the Wynn concierge, and it was for one night. We just needed these tickets, and you were sold out, couldn't get tickets. So we went to see Beatles Love, a load of people jumping around on roller skates. But I nearly got to see you.
No, well, I mean, I love that. I love the Love show. It's incredible. I like the old version more than the new version, but what an incredible show that is as well.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I did enjoy it, but I think I would have liked to have seen you croon, because
if I had seen you in the show, you would have literally been, have to be carried out. You'd have been so full of tequila.
Again.
Part of the show, again. Yeah.
Sounds like a promise and
does,
a threat.
It certainly does. When you lived out there, so you had this residency out there, when you lived out there, obviously you would have had to have got backwards and forwards to the casino. What was you driving?
A number of vehicles. A 488 Ferrari. I had...
get in.
I guess the Mulsanne, the Bentley Mulsanne, was the staple for the second half of the shows. I had a ghost at Caesars, roly-poly.
Yep, nice.
Sometimes I take my 66 Mustang, my Cobra.
I have one of them. In fact, I've still got one. Got a 65 coupe.
Yeah, so my mum was a coupe as well. But yeah, I love my cars. I've had maybe six Astons. So the Astons are still my favourite. I've had all of them, really. I've had the Vantage 1972. I've had the DB7, DB9, and then maybe three DB11s.
Wow.
Did anything change for you when you were choosing what your next motor would be in Vegas? Because obviously everything's different. The terrain's different. The heat is insane. I mean, how much were you kind of focusing on how good's the AC?
You know, that's a very, very relevant question. It's 120 degrees outside. You are Fahrenheit, obviously. It's a big decision. So I think the Mulsanne for me, I liked the Ghost. I liked the doors and all those functions, but dash and all that. I'm a big fan of like the analog looking dashboard. So the Mulsanne to me had all those analog looking dials and a smaller steering wheel. So you had a much more sportier feel. So the Mulsanne was definitely my favorite car to pull up to the show in.
So is there a collection of Matt Goss cars still residing somewhere in Vegas on the side of his street with tickets all over them that I can get out there and buy off you?
No, unfortunately, I just I let all my cars go to come back. It was a big decision for me to come back to the UK because there was a certain, I guess, sense of fear that I had coming back. But, you know, when the last record I released did well and made the top 10, and I spent more time in the UK playing like Frisbee in the Park and just enjoying the parks, because I'm a big lover of the parks. It's the last place I had a conversation with my late mother was in St. James Park, and there's a certain tree there. And it just, and the familiarity that I have with people like yourself, and the familiarity that I'm lucky enough to receive from the British public, they make me feel safe. And I need that at this time in my life, you know. So all the trappings and that stuff is fun out there now, but I'm really happy to be back, and I'm starting to acclimate now. And I've got my bulldog with me, Reggie.
The thing you got wrong with that, it's acclimatise. You just said, I'm trying to acclimate, which is the American term for acclimatise.
Well, there are certain things I still say.
You still say trash?
I say trash. Hopefully I've still got my London accent, but I still, and I say trunk.
Yeah, you've still got your London accent, but you've got the Vegas tan, Matt. That's still the tan.
Well, I've just got a holiday, so I'm not like, I'm not doing the George Hamilton.
Is it, Matt, a bit like me, you know, when I went to Los Angeles for 6 years, and you come back and you land back in what is the motherland, home, especially you're a London lad. So you come back, you're walking around St. James's Park with your late mother. There is a sense of not only home, but there's a sense of swagger you get when you're in London, not only from you, but from other people. It's like, you know, when people pass you and they can see you are, they give you a little glance or a knowing nod, but they just won't interfere, you know, they won't interfere in that. It's sort of that, well, they might interfere with you, they certainly don't with me, but they might, you know, it's that London feel, that vibe that you get from fellow Londoners that just, yeah, he's a lad, he's one of us.
I feel like I definitely consider myself one of the lads, and I like the company of men. You know, I mean, I love women, love my girlfriend, she's amazing, but I like the company of men. I like the camaraderie. We're much simpler beings than I think women think. But when I'm walking through the park and stuff like that, I really enjoy the conversational side of my life. People do come up to me all the time, and I like it because I have such a small family now. We've lost some very important people in my life. And I love that conversational side of my life in the UK. But I also love the feeling of being a man. My granddad and my mum taught me to be a gentleman. And it wasn't a movement that did that. My family taught me that. So to answer your question in a long-winded way, I feel great in a suit, walking through London, looking at the architecture and being a man. I like being a man. And I also like being Matt Goss. It's fun being me. So sorry if I digressed a little bit.
No, it's true, man. Nice. I mean, I get it. I absolutely get it. I'm just going to, just something popped in my head. So we spoke about the cars back in Vegas. So if Matt Goss is driving into London to go and walk around the park, what'd you go in?
Well, I am currently in that decision. I'm about to go on tour. So I'm not going to be buying a car before I go on tour. It makes no sense for me, but I was kind of blown away about the insurance and all that. You got off-road parking and all this stuff. Like, you don't really have to deal with that in America. So the kind of motors I was looking at the DBS. I did look at a DB4, I'm going to be honest. But then I thought that was a little bit of a, could have been a bit of a nightmare. I've got my eye, probably it will be an Aston, but I also like the idea of having an E-Type as well. Just because I just love, to your point, I love swagger, and I like, you know, the whole idea of having an E-Type. That's what I would like to find. I don't want to get ripped off.
Have you got off-street parking, Matt?
Yeah, that's very true.
I've got connections, mate.
Well, you have got a connection now. Don't go and buy yourself a classic car, Matt, without coming to see me first.
No, I am actually serious. I want your advice, because I don't want one of the, I don't care if it's limited edition E-Type. I just want a nice looking E-Type. That's enough for me.
You want a coupe or a roadster?
I'm open to either one, but it's just got to look right, feel right. But I really have always wanted to have an E-Type in London.
Mate, trust me, I'll find you an E-Type. It'll be easy for me to find you an E-Type.
I'm going to hold you to that, I am.
No, I can. If anyone can, Matt, who can? I can.
Can you do it over that night of tequilas, though? Because yeah, that'd be much more fun, I think.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. Wouldn't it? Tequilas,
I would love nothing more. I like tequila. I like tequila with a good old slice of orange in it. I don't know if you tried it with orange.
No,
it's
never.
Nice.
Never. Yeah. Last time I had tequila, I can remember my wife Michelle was here actually. Last time I had tequila, she said it looked like somebody had removed your spine. So that's what it did to me.
And one of your kidneys.
while we're on the motoring thing, because I can see you're a bit of a petrol head, yeah. The very first royalty check. There's you and your brother. You're smashing it. You're all over the airways. You're number one. That big, nice, I hope, big, fat, juicy royalty check comes flying through the post. What are you going to do with it? Do you go, right, I'm going to go and get myself a Mark I Golf GTI? What happens back then?
Well, back then, we had, I mean, I had a proper funny, it was a couple of funny stories before Bros, but like I did buy a Golf.
Get in, I knew it would be. I didn't know that. I didn't know that. I guessed it.
I bought a black and silver Golf GTI.
Yes, yes.
And then parts it up, the roof was silver and the car was black. It was really, it was proper. And then I came out the next day and it was yellow and it was flaking. Somebody had hand painted, like literally, like sprayed painted this car black and silver. And obviously, as a kid, you don't really know the difference between finishes and all that. You don't care about finishing. You just go black and silver. It's wicked. So it was ended up being a yellow motor, like, and it was like looked like it had a bunch of cornflakes all over it. It was like it was all peeling away. And it was just so that was my first experience. Then my mate asked he said, "Do you want to buy this Fiat 500?" And I was like, "Absolutely amazing! Bring it over." So I'm bringing it over now. You've got to come out now, though. So I'm in it, and it's a really nippy little thing.
Yeah,
and,
perfect London car.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I said, "How much do you want it for?" He goes, 50 quid. I was like, 50 quid? He's like, yeah. He says, anyway, he goes around the corner, loses control, knocks over a lamppost, and it falls on top of the Fiat 500. He said, and he starts, "You've got to go run, we run." I said, "What? Why are we running?" He says, "Because I nicked it." So he nicked his car and tried to sell me it. I said, "So you're going to sell me a stolen car, but I've only found out because we've just knocked over a lamppost."
And well, you were going to pay for a stolen car, man.
Yeah, <it was. laughs> And then the funniest one was my mate, and he had a Scorpio. Was it a Scorpio?
Yeah, Granada Scorpio.
No, a Scorpio. And he had a Scorpio. And I was, same thing, I was sitting in the driver's seat. And I was like, "I can see the floor. I can see the road." So again, they'd welded together two Scorpios.
Oh dear!
And we went over a speed bump, and it broke in half. The car broke in half, and we just literally left it. We left it there. But they were the kind of motors, and the only decent car I had when I was before Bros was a Datsun Cherry with Wolf Race wheel.
Matt Goss, never, ever, ever go and buy a car without having Mike Brewer holding your hand ever in the future.
Mike, I think you need to steal an airtight and see if you can sell it.
Then I remember my first proper motor was, I remember before our world tour, we went on and it was the Lotus Esprit Turbo.
Oh, nice.
And I loved it, that sound, sucking in all the air for the turbo. I love that car so much.
And it's a car of that era, isn't it? I mean, there's you with your ripped jeans and your bandana on, your little biker jacket in a Lotus Esprit.
Well, so little. I'm 6'2", 42 chest. Come on, hold on. It's shrinking me.
That's the way I can handle myself.
My little biker jacket. Come on.
Anything's little to me, Matt. Look at the size of me. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, but I loved that car. It was wicked. It was just like, you know, but I remember picking a girlfriend up. She goes, it's a bit low, isn't it? I'm like, champagne problem. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's
that's
the first thing you're going to say. So, yeah.
Was the glove box full of bottle tops?
No, it wasn't. I don't think it had a glove box, if I'm honest.
No, I don't think it does. I don't think it does. And not one of them's the same. They're all hand-built. So if you buy a door panel off another one and try to screw it into yours, the holes won't match up.
Because but you can bloody tell it's handmade, can't you?
They're just handmade. I mean,
not necessarily in a Rolls-Royce.
In a good way. Yeah, no, they're not made in a good way. Here you are, back in England. You just alluded to it a moment ago because you are going to need a set of wheels to get you around the country because you've made a phone call, called in a few friends, which happens to be the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra. How you pull that off, I don't know. And you're on a tour all around England with this this new show of yours. Tell us all about it.
It's I've done so many shows abroad and I come back every year to do, you know, the Royal Albert Hall or the Palladium or one of those, and I love it. It's amazing coming back every year. But now I'm here, I've not toured the UK in a long time, and all of the big memories for me in the last decade, you know, have been in Vegas. And I do a lot of shows abroad, just did a show in the Serengeti in Africa. And so I do all these beautiful shows. And I'm like, well, I want to do these shows in the UK. So I got my 15-piece big band and the Royal Philharmonic all on one stage. So there's going to be 30 plus musicians on stage on this. And I just really, I just want to bring the swagger and the glamour and the absolute, you know, passion, this all kind of immersive experience that I bring. And I just want the fellas to get dressed up, the ladies to get dressed up and have an intermission where it's a little bit boozy and just do what I did in Vegas. So when you, you know, you get have a few drinks, meet a few new people and come back in and for a smashing second half. And just, I just want to create a night out. And I'm also trying to put an after party together as well. So it is a proper night out. I don't want to do just concerts anymore. I want to be that guy that if you come to my show, you are going out for a night out. And you're going to meet new people, and you might be, you might fall over, and you might still be holding on.
That's amazing. That's amazing. A bit like a, what is it, Prince? He used to do a like a 2 hour set, and then after he used to do 2.5 hours at an after party.
Yeah,
that's going to be you. That is, you're going to be.
I just want it to be glamorous. I love it, and I'm not ashamed about it. I just love the thought of people going, I'm going to get dressed up and bring it, and just have a night, a good night out, but also have 30 musicians, you know, playing their hearts out.
Are you spacing these out, Matt? Because it's by the sound of things, you're going to be singing your heart out, having a little rest where you knock a couple back, sing your heart out again, and then go and party with your audience. So you can't do that night after night. You're building in some recovery time.
No, I'm not building recovery time.
How are you with hangovers?
It's part of the process. I think I want to go out on the road and. I think for me, as a singer, you've got to be careful because it's all biology. It's your larynx, your vocal cords. You've got to take it easy. So I've learned how to do, I was doing 4 shows a week in Vegas. So this is quite an easy run for me, 18 shows. But yeah, I just want to encourage people to come out. And if you're not a Matt Goss fan, that's all right. That's what I'm almost used to in Vegas, people coming in. But trust me that they'll have a good night out. That's what I want. That's really what I want to do. I want to be this country's, one of this country's fellas that really brings it right.
Fantastic. Well, Matt, before we get on to a little fantasy road trip with you, if people wanted to go and see you in concert, how can they find out more about it and buy tickets?
You either follow me on my social media, Instagram, which is Matt Goss, but it's the easiest way is just to go to mattgosstour.com. So it's easy, mattgosstour.com, and you can get tickets, meet and greets. We're going to do, there's all different packages. And I'm just looking forward to see everybody. I really am.
Well, just put me and Michelle down for Oxford because we're not too far from Oxford, are we? So put me and Michelle down for Oxford and we'd love to come and have a hug, a squeeze, a glass of whiskey.
Turn up with my E-type.
Yeah, turn up with your E-type. I can do that. Listen, folks, I just want to say a big thank you for listening to the Wheeler Dealer podcast brought to you by Gardex Group. Gardex offer a range of award-winning automotive products, including paint and interior protection, insurance products and digital solutions. Whether you're buying your next car or you're an automotive dealer, look no further. Go with Gardex. To find out more, visit GardexGroup.com.
This is the Wheeler Dealer podcast with Mike Burr and Andy Jay.
What we've got, right, each week with our guests, we give them this scenario, right? So this is, it's a complete fantasy. So you can choose whatever car you like, whatever road you like, whatever person you like, alive and dead. The one thing, Andy's brought in a rule, which is, I think it's a fair rule, which is...
You've got to be famous. You can't have your friends and family. They've got to be something that everyone knows. So it doesn't matter if it's Frank Sinatra or Yoda. We've just got to know who
you
they
just
are.
Can't say it's my girlfriend sitting beside me because otherwise, you know, we're all going to say that, aren't we? To keep our marriages intact. Right. So here we go. Here we go, Matt. Matt Goss, the world is your oyster. Open checkbook. Choose a car. Any car you like. What's it going to be?
I have the feeling that everyone says the same car.
Well, we're banning that as well. So if we've already had the car, we'll tell you have to choose another one. And you get to choose two cars, one for the way out, one for the way back.
Okay, I know that it's all going to be banned, DB5.
Nope, that's not, fine. But it's fine. Allowed. That's perfect.
Yeah, we're good.
What a choice. I'm going to ask you, is it because of Bond? Is that the choice is because of Bond? You like your sharp suits, you're a London man, you look the part. Is it because of Bond or is it because I just love an Aston Martin DB5?
I think that honestly, it's both. I mean, every fella that I know, you've got to have something proper wrong with you if you don't like Bond. I think it's got that Bond element, you know, that I love. But I also think it's in silver. It's arguably one of the most beautiful beautiful looking cars ever made.
Totally agree. Totally.
I just love it. It's a beautiful motor.
Aston did those replicas, didn't they?
They did.
You could have the James Bond spec where you could have it
with
smoke
machine
out
guns,
the back and pretend
yeah.
machine guns. Would you go yeah. all in? Would you go James Bond
no.
spec?
No.
No. You don't want the toys.
I don't want any of it. I don't want any of the toys. I just want the analog dials. I want a very kind of a rigid power steering on it.
Unbelievable. When I was making my show in Los Angeles, we was making it down at Huntington Beach, the British Trade Minister and the British Ambassador for America, two Brits, were coming down to the studio to come and see me make the show. They turned up in a silver Aston Martin DB5. I've never seen anything so cool in my life. You've got the Trade Minister and the Ambassador for the LA turned up in an Aston Martin DB5. It was just so
beautiful.
Slick. There was a little sub-story to this. They walked into the studio. We were filming outside. They walked into the studio where the lights were off. Michelle shaking her head. Where the lights were off. And then I heard, shit, shit. And I run into the studio, switch the lights on. And one of the crew's dogs had had diarrhea everywhere all over the floor. And the British ambassador and trade minister had just walked straight in their church brogues and just slid straight through it. Yeah, so right. Michel walked in with the... He was at the workshop sink scrubbing his church brogues with a little scrubbing brush, getting the shit off his shoes. And Michel walked in and said, oh, are you okay? He went, no, I trod in dog shit. Michel went, that's lucky that is.
Is it?
That's lucky that is. There was nothing lucky about it, let me tell you. Right, so here we go. Matt Goss. There you are, behind the wheels, grabbing onto that beautiful, thin wooden steering wheel, that lovely gear knob. It's in your hand. You've got that throbbing V8 in front of you. What's underneath the tyres? What road are you on?
I think I would start in Aix-en-Provence, have some nice wine, some gin and tonics, listen to some live music.
Nice.
Drive down through to Nice, maybe stay at the Negresto Hotel. A couple of nights there with, you know, obviously we're doing this as a fantasy thing.
Yeah, it's a fantasy.
I would then go down through into Monte Carlo and then just spend a load of money at the casino there on the hairpin.
Just, I can see. You can actually, yeah, this
like
is
this.
One of those trips you can visualize as yeah. well as here.
Yeah, I like this one.
So this is really working. So who is in your passenger seat?
It'd be Elvis.
Oh, I knew you was going to say that. I actually wrote down on a piece of paper Frank Sinatra.
No, it's Elvis.
Yeah, well, Sinatra would be a choice, but I think it would be Elvis just because with Sinatra, I was lucky enough to meet Sinatra, and I was actually a guest of Liza Minnelli at the Royal Albert Hall, and Sammy Davis came in and said, "Can I wear your jacket?" And we had a great, it was amazing to meet Sammy and Liza and. And then, but then I was lucky enough to meet Frank.
Wow.
But Frank's got to be, for me, Frank's got to be with Dean. So you said I can only have one person.
No, that's just the passenger seat next to you.
That's the passenger seat next to you. So there's two back seats.
Right.
So who's in the back seats?
All right. So because it's your rules. I can't.
It's your rules. You can say who you want.
I would be Frank, Sammy and Dean then. Frank, Sammy and Dean in the car.
What a musical. Is Sammy still wearing
your
jacket?
Jacket, yes.
Did you let him wear your jacket?
At this point, I would hope that he's hanging out the window with no shirt on.
Yeah, probably. Knowing him, he probably would be. And what are you listening to on the radio? Bear in mind, it's going to be a bit of a, well, there'd be a conflict of interest.
That would be difficult.
Because if you put Elvis on the radio, obviously Frank or Dean in the back is going to get a bit upset.
I know what album it would. And you've got to listen to this album. It's Live at the Sands. It's Frank Sinatra, Live at the Sands. Whoever, if you haven't listened to the album and you want to listen to the way that how funny Frank was and not just is how beautiful he is as a singer, Live at the Sands is one of the best albums. It'll keep you company on any road trip. It's such a brilliant record, and it's got all the banter and all that. So Live at the Sands
would seem like a bit of a waste though, Matt, if he's actually in the car. You could just get him to sing it to you.
I'm pretty sure, but what's better than a sing-along with the Rat Pack?
Right, so I just want to lay it out for you one more time, Matt, just in case you've forgotten, right? You're in an Aston Martin, silver Aston Martin DB5. Yeah. You're on a Côte d'Azur. You're driving down to the Monaco casino in Monte Carlo Square. Beside you, you've got Elvis Presley. You've got the Rat Pack in the rear seat. You're singing along to that Sands, the Night at
Live
the
at the Sands.
Live at the Sands casino. You're singing along to that. What is in the snack box? What are you eating?
Oh, snack box. Ooh.
So what do they... What, I mean, Elvis is going to go for a squirrel sandwich, isn't he?
How do you feed the Rat Pack?
I am an absolute sandwich nut. Like, it's one of the things that I could be on any fancy place. I always fancy a sandwich. So it'd have to be, like, a bunch of sandwiches for me. Like,
nice.
Egg salad sandwich.
Egg salad sandwich, that'd do. I like that.
I'd be worried about it messing up the interior.
Yeah, I mean, especially on the Aston Martin.
You've got bigger problems. Bigger problems than that.
So once you're at the casino, you go in. You're obviously going to win because you ain't going to lose your shirt. You're going to win. You're just the coolest dude in town. Now, when you come out of the casino, remember, you walk out, you've got Elvis stumbling beside you. You've got the Rat Pack stumbling to it. Frank Sinatra's still howling these tunes out. And the Aston Martin has been nicked. Somebody's taken it. Yeah. Right? So now you need to get this lot back home. What are you going to say to me?
There's the only one car that
could... Go on.
It's got to be a Corniche. Got to be the Corniche.
Unfortunately, Mr. Matt Goss.
No.
Richard Hammond had the Corniche taken.
Yeah, so you're going to have to think.
So come on.
So you've got a garage which is stocked with all of these incredible Ranger cars, but the Corniche has gone. Space is gone.
Elvis did have a very big 59 caddy, if I remember rightly.
Wouldn't be
nice on the French roads, though, would it?
No, I wouldn't do the caddy.
You can put them in anything. You can put them in a clown car if you want.
I would do the soft top. It's going to be a big old squeeze. It'd have to be the soft top E-type.
E-type soft top. Wow. With those three sitting on the shelf at the back.
On the shelf.
The Rat Pack on the shelf at the back. You know, Elvis Presley did actually have an E-type Jaguar, did he?
Well, I think I'd put Elvis at the back because he's got the hair to handle it. He wouldn't mind the hair, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I wouldn't do that to Frank. I'd put Frank in the passenger seat, you know what I mean?
And do you drive the whole way, Matt, or do you let some of them have a go behind you?
No, at this point, I probably wouldn't want to drive. I just want to just take it all in. Yeah.
Who are you choosing to be the driver then, if it's not yourself?
I think Dean Martin, because that's going to be a very scary ride. Around those mountains.
It's that Italian blood. It'd just drive you... Well, it'd be terrifying. I think that would be terrifying. I'd, out of all of them, I think I'd have Elvis drive, to be honest with you. Yeah, probably.
Why Elvis?
I think I'd have Elvis drive because probably he was used to driving big, fat, slow, doddery American cars. And if you're in an E-type Jaguar on the Côte d'Azur, remember the road you're going on. You're going to be going on, that strip of tarmac that's clinging to the side of a mountain where there's nothing but ocean on one side and hill on the other.
I can just see, but you can use Dean Martin's cufflinks as a little curbside little reminder where the mountain...
like a speedway boot. It's all right. Yeah. We've got his cufflinks.
I'm going to tell you.
His cufflinks. We can't hear the scrape. We're too close to the edge.
It is the best fantasy road trip so far. I mean, that is a good one. And it negates a lot of people that come thereafter.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to follow.
It's going to be hard to follow this one, isn't it?
Because they're going to be like, Matt Goss has already done that with the
Rat Pack. He's had that. No, he had that person and he had that car. So that's the gated dose. So you've crushed it. Matt, we are so excited to have you back in England. Welcome home, mate. We not only from me and Andy and the rest of the team, but, we're just so excited to have you here. We can't wait to see how successful this tour of yours is going to be. You're going to smash it. You know you are. You and your brother, you banged out the O2 Arena and you could have probably filled that up for a month.
I also say as well, like, honestly, you also kept me company in America as well. I love your show. And you got such humility and honestly, a good slice of this country back. You know, I watched your show in America and it was just, honestly, it kept me company. So thank you for that, mate.
Oh, mate, I really appreciate that. That's very, very kind of you. It was, I said, we got something in common. Me and Matt Goss got something in common. He said, what? I said, I remember going in to do SEMA the big SEMA show that you would have had all the drunk SEMA people coming to watch your show in the evenings. Every November in Vegas, they have this big motoring expo called SEMA. And I walked into, I drove into Vegas, and there was a 100-foot picture of me on the side of a building in Vegas. And I'm like, shit, I'd made it to Vegas. And there was this huge picture of me. But yeah, you turn a corner and there's an even bigger one of Matt Goss. So I just felt really small. But it was a really proud moment.
I was going to say, like, we in this country, we definitely kind of tone it all down. And it's okay to be excited, like a little kid. First time I saw my billboards in Vegas, after all I've done, you still get that buzz. It's an incredible
thing. It's amazing, isn't it?
We're going to leave this earth. And I will say to anyone listening, like, the jealousy culture and all that, like, and talking about cars especially, I've been saying a lot in interviews, like, if your neighbour gets a new motor, go and knock on their door and say, I love your new car. It's like, it's a better way to live, you know. Like, I wish everyone the very, very best, because it's just a better way to live, you know.
Is that why you were worried about coming back, Matt? Because you said you had some apprehensions about coming back to the UK earlier in our chat, and I didn't get to ask why that was. What were you nervous about?
I think, to be honest with you, mate, it's this country. I love it so much, but the things that I love because of this country, like my family, like certainly my mum, it brings up some sediment, you know, emotional sediment that it makes me feel very comforted. If it sounds somewhat dysfunctional, that the British Republic make me feel like I'm family, but it also reminds me that she's not here and my sister's not here. Ironically, she's killed by a drunk driver. But so this country brings up a lot of emotion. I have a lot of history here, but I'm at that point as a man where I just feel like, you know, I need to have that familiarity that I have here. And it's much needed as a man, as an entertainer, and just as a human being. I enjoy being here now. So it's a journey, you know. But it's one that I'm really glad that I jumped off the and took a leap of faith and came back. To be a resident after the first time after 25 years, it's definitely new to me, but I'm loving being back, and I'm loving being back in this country and the way that people treat me here.
Mm. Well, mate, if you're looking for acceptance, I can see from my heart and from everyone I've spoke to and said that I'm going to be talking to you today, you're a national treasure, and you make Britain proud. You know, you really do. You're an utter national treasure. Now, we end our podcast every week with a question from the boss lady.
Going to have to the
yes, we are. And the boss lady is my wife, Mrs. B. There she is. Look at that, just on the edge of screen. So, hi. Mrs. B, what's your question for Matt?
Okay. Everything that you've done and what's happened to you on your journey to where you are, have you found your inner peace?
What a question.
Beautiful question. No, I haven't. I think it's an ongoing thing. I think that the title of my last record, The Beautiful Unknown, is really something that I'm trying to listen to myself and trust that the things that I don't know will be things that I don't need to fear. I think when you've had certain phone calls, you know, that I've had and experienced certain things I've experienced, there are so many little things that I have to try and work through. But I have found the ability to draw a line in the sand and not allow disrespect in my life. And I think that whether you're my family or whether you're not my family, you treat me kindly, I'll treat you kindly. If you don't, then you'll see another side of me. And, you know, I think setting boundaries is a very important thing towards that finding peace. So since I've started to set much firmer boundaries of how, you know, we all communicate, and also how politically correct everybody is here. And I think that we have to really, really encourage men to feel good about themselves again.
Do you think that's the same both sides of the water in the US and here in the
absolutely.
UK?
Yeah, absolutely. We become absolutely terrified of each other. And I think if you operate from a place of kindness, and you operate from a place of decency, then you'll be in a safe spot. But that has the generalization about being a man, that's got to stop. That is not fair. And I feel like that is part of my journey towards peace, just being able to say how I feel and what is fair and what is not fair. You know, I just want to say one thing, that if you silence the minority, that's criminal. If you silence the majority, that's criminal. But what's happening is we're silencing the majority for the sake of the minority. We have lost our way. We have to listen to both sides, but not at the expense of either one. So I think that, you know, being able to speak my mind and actually do shows like this where there is context within my language, not just a soundbite, which I've been represented by my whole life. You know, I'll say something and there'll be one little snippet and that will have no context. And that's what represents me. That's why I love doing these things where we can actually have a proper conversation.
You're quite straight and direct then.
I am. I am. And I think the only thing I would ask is have my back behind my back. You can say you can be nice to me in front of me and I appreciate that. But when I leave the room and you've got my back, that's true loyalty. And that is what my definition of freedom is. I think loyalty is freedom. Even if you've been betrayed like I have throughout my career, and you still have to see the good in people, but have their back, have people's back behind their back.
Well, I started this off with a Matt, you make me feel less of a human being because you're just absolutely beautiful. But after listening to you, I'm going to end it with I feel like a useless human being now, because you are quite possibly the most beautiful, kindest, warm-hearted man I've ever had the pleasure to meet over Zoom. I can't wait to do it in person. Mm-hmm. When I come to see you in Oxford, I really want to do that.
And I'd love to see you.
Matt, from my heart, from here at the Wheeler Dealer podcast, we send you oodles of love.
100%.
All my love to you too. What a beautiful, beautiful experience. Lovely. Love you guys.
Thanks,
lovely.
Matt.
Take care.
Well, how good was that? That was absolutely fantastic. What a beautiful, warm, kind-hearted human being Matt Goss is. A real surprise.
A delight and a surprise. And he's one of us, Mike. He loves his cars.
He certainly is a proper London boy. Michelle, you liked that, didn't you?
Very deep.
It was quite deep,
yes,
wasn't he?
Lovely.
It was absolutely lovely. If you want to go and see Matt on tour, don't forget you can book your tickets at mattgosstours.com. Hopefully, I'll see you there. Thank you very much for joining us this week. It's been an absolute delight. If you want to find out more about us or you want to ask us a question, then where can they find us?
Well, joyfully, it's all about your socials, Mike, isn't it? I mean, thankfully, I'm assuming that anyone listening to this right now also follows you across all the different platforms.
Well, I'd like to think they might.
I mean, if they're not yet, they could do that with a couple of little clicks.
You can find me across all forms of social media on Instagram and Twitter. I'm Mike Brewer. On Facebook, it's just Wheeler Dealer.
And we have to give a little shout out if people have kind of jumped straight into this. And we do know that with these celebrity episodes, people do kind of pick and choose. Sometimes they'll listen specifically to a celebrity they want. And it might be that some people are listening to this just because they love Matt Goss. And now we do too. So if you haven't heard episode one with us, really, with Richard Hammond, well, where have you been?
Well,
got to check it out.
That was absolutely fantastic as well. It was blooming awesome, that one.
Yeah,
and we've got so many more amazing guests lined up. I'm really excited about this. I'm
desperate to tease them, but I'd rather people just kind of wait and see.
Yeah, just wait and see. Yeah. It's exciting, isn't it? It's like opening a present on Christmas morning.
Listen, thanks everybody for listening. You have been listening to a TVI Media production. We'll be back very soon, won't we?
We certainly will. Thanks for listening and for being a passenger on the Wheeler Dealer podcast. It was brought to you by Gardex Group, the ultimate vehicle protection solutions provider. Whether you're buying your next car or an automotive dealer, go with Gardex. Visit GardexGroup.com. Ta-la!